At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Success in hip-hop is easy to reach, but even harder to keep. In an instant, everything you fought to build can slip away, leaving a once thriving rapper grasping for any chance to reclaim their place. One moment they're at top of the game, the next, they're fading into irrelevance and struggling to find their way back. Sometimes, it doesn't even matter how good their music is, fans have simply moved on. Other times, it's the sting of a disappointing album that turns their once loyal fanbase against them. And more often than not, those attempts lead to some pretty embarrassing outcomes. And today we're diving into some of hip-hop's biggest flops, as well as some of the downright cringeworthy ways that these rappers reacted to them. And when it comes to an artist who goes by the name of Roddy Ricch, he went as far as to literally delete all of his social media accounts from how bad the backlash was. It's hard to put into words just how much of a phenomenon Roddy Ricch was in 2019 and beyond. Led by TikTok, The Box became one of the biggest songs of the entire year, leading the Compton MC suddenly scoring insane sales of his debut album, Please Excuse Me for Being Antisocial. Before the song was released, the success of other tracks like Ballin' and Die Young, among others, meant that he was probably on track for a modest first outing, because as great as it was, his Feed the Street 2 project peaked at number 67. With the momentum of one now iconic track, he skyrocketed to the top, scoring a number one record, a chart-topping single, and first week sales of over 101,000. And it didn't stop there. His streams stayed strong for months. Considering how much success he had at a time when new stars were few and far between, all eyes were basically on Roddy. And this was something he was acutely aware of, if not a little afraid of.
You never want to rise to the top too fast in anything, because usually when you get to the top, there's no other way to go but down.
Right.
Unfortunately for him, his own prediction of a downward spiral after such a massive breakout hit turned to be spot on. Dropped in 2021, his sophomore album Live Life Fast failed to inspire commercially or creatively. Alongside losing 40,000 in first week sales, the album was met with dull, uninspired reviews. His poor performance would haunt him for years, no matter how much he insisted it didn't.
Just because the numbers didn't align up, or the timing or the plan didn't really fall the way it was supposed to fall, and now niggas got this different narrative of how they want to play it, but I know what's going on. I still know I'm an earner. I'm still where I'm at. I ain't.
Time and time again, Roddy faced accusations of falling off after Live Life Fast sent his career into a downward spiral. So even when it was time to promote the third installment of the album, he still found himself having to prove where he stood.
What do you say to yourself when you people try to have these expectations and they're so unrealistic?
You know, I mean, that's on them. I feel like I've just been having a great career in rap. You know what I'm saying? My first album is, Feed the Streets 2 is a double platinum mixtape. First album, Antisocial, double platinum. Live Life Fast is gold so far. At Feed the Streets 3.
Great.
So, you know, I just look at it like we still doing what we doing. It's an ongoing process. Every album is not going to be the greatest album to ever live. You know, we got to be okay with that. I feel like whatever people's expectations are, they need to put them on themselves.
The feedback of the album was so bad that even when Roddy took to Twitter to tease new music, a move that lined up with how he vowed to drop more frequently following the lukewarm reception of his last LP, he got utterly destroyed in the comment section. Nah, this shit sound like one of them shits them SoundCloud rappers promote on every tweet. After facing disappointing feedback, the 23-year-old quickly deleted the tweet, prompting comparisons to Chance the Rapper and his reaction to the Big Day flopping. Luckily or unluckily, the internet never forgets, and users managed to save the clip before it was gone. Not long after, Roddy Ricch deleted both his Twitter and Instagram, but before pulling the plug, he left one last message on his IG story that would stain his reputation. Guess I'm a flop now. Shit crazy. After a couple of years in the artist...
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Wilderness while struggling with custody issues, Roddy now looks to be showing signs of recovery. As a fellow Compton MC, Roddy returns from Paris Fashion Week just to show up for Kendrick's now legendary Ken and Friends pop-out show, a move that earned him a wave of goodwill from the public, something that he hadn't felt since the peak of his career.
I had talked to Doc. I'm like, man, I spent a lot of money in Paris already. He like, I get it. If you gotta do what you gotta do. And I sat on it for a couple of days. I'm like, man, I can't miss this. I'm like, I can't miss this.
Respect for Roddy for dropping Paris for the pop-out. I know Paris is probably a big deal for his comeback, but being a part of history and culture is something no amount of money can buy. With the pop-out reigniting faith in him, the Navy album seems to carry a deeper concept, paying tribute to both a larger theme and his soon-to-be daughter, who shares the same name.
A few reasons. The color navy is it represents authority, power, and you know, I just feel like having a daughter in this day and time and in this stage of life, you definitely want to empower your kids.
Yes, sir.
And be there for them.
How old is she, if you don't mind my asking?
No, she ain't born yet.
Oh, you talking about the one that's coming?
Yeah, this is the name. You know.
Wait, bro. So the baby that's not here, y'all already got your. So that's power in the name already.
Yeah, then. Navy.
Oh, okay.
You know, the world just accepting that and, oh, Navy's coming. The Navy era, you know, it's like, it's Navy time. You know what I mean?
For Roddy, it now feels like he's come through the other side of a disappointing run. So now, he has the chance to get another genuine shot at greatness. But while Roddy has been given a chance to turn things around, not every artist has been so lucky. And in the case of Lil Uzi Vert, his continued spiral into a slump meant that things just kept getting worse. Back in his initial run, there was no one who captivated the modern hip-hop audience like Lil Uzi. A self-styled rock star from Philly, Uzi's unique swagger and ear for melodic flows meant that everything he touched would promptly become a hit. And after 2017's Love Is Rage 2 made him a real driving force in the scene, disputes between Uzi and his label Generation Now, as well as a whole host of tracks being released without his permission, would lead to a lengthy absence. And when he did finally return on 2020's Eternal Attack, he did so as a conquering hero, racking up a wild 289,000 first week sales. But while the release of Eternal Attack in its deluxe made it seem like Uzi was back on top, there was still a major problem. The album didn't fulfill him at all. He later admitted that most of the original project had leaked, forcing him to redo it. In his eyes, the final version didn't reflect his true artistry. Instead, it felt watered down to appeal to the masses, leaving him unsatisfied with the end result. Following a joint project with Future, Uzi began teasing the Pink Tape, which was subject to another vast delay. And when asked why, it seemed like the issue was the rapper was way too in his head and had begun to internalize criticism.
No, it's not. Then it dropped next week and then it sounds like shit and I gotta hear it, well, not from you, but then I gotta hear it from like 100,000 people on the internet. This sucks! So you gotta let me take my time.
It's not gonna suck.
But I'm taking my time, so it won't suck.
When it finally dropped in 2023, the sales were solid, but that wasn't the real problem. Cause while people were still listening, it was the older tracks that got the most attention. Fans felt the project suffered from inconsistency, with his attempts to juggle multiple sounds at once ultimately working against it.
But it has a bit of a darker and more aggressive tone to it. That's what I like about the record as well. And
but then you find out that song was made in 2017.
And it was only touched up in 2022. That you could tell it comes from 2017, but I'm going to take that.
Once again, the mixed reviews meant that in the aftermath of its release, Uzi's self-confidence was knocked. But in October of 2023, he issued a stern warning, teamed with an explanation of why his music wasn't hitting the same, saying, "By the way, my music wasn't hitting the same because I didn't go through shit. I recently went through something. Y'all rappers that be saying my name, just be ready. I don't know what y'all think changed. The bumback season." But despite Uzi insisting that he was about to kill it, it turned out to make little difference.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
In the lead up to the album's release, Uzi thought he nailed it, even explaining that he regretted shelving so many tracks previously, while claiming that revamping his fashion sense had made all the difference.
This is actually one of the fastest back-to-back drops
between Pink Tape and Eternal Take 2
that I ever did, which people should notice that I feel like I'm like the shit again. And I never not felt like I wasn't the shit, but I just got that, like, I got like a little second wind. I don't know what it is.
Where did it come from, you think?
I just switched out my closet like not too long ago. Mm-hmm. Seriously.
Dress better, feel better.
Yeah, and it's like it just made me a different person. I probably was just dressing trash for a while.
I don't think you've ever dressed trash though.
Sometimes. It comes with the tear to it.
But the end result was that the album was his first album ever to not reach number one. Plus, it didn't really resonate with fans, with Uzi's approach no longer capturing attention as it once did.
Pretty much after spinning this project, I came away from it thinking, what was even the point? It's hardly catchy, it's not really all that memorable, it's not aesthetically defining in any way, it's not really seeing Uzi Vert travel into any new or exciting territory. There are a load of tracks on this thing that are so sloppily executed that they're just, again, totally unlistenable. It's almost like Lil Uzi Vert forgot how to rap or sing or make music for a few cuts here. Really, the only purpose this record actually serves is to remind us how much better Lil Uzi Vert was like 4 years ago.
Coupled with poor reviews, it only sold 59,000, a staggering drop of over 200,000 from its predecessor. And while it likely took Uzi by surprise, even his own fans believe that the lack of faith in him from audiences is the result of being disappointed time and time again. This isn't exactly the beginning. People thought EA, Lil Uzi vs. The World 2, and Pluto X Baby Pluto did not live up to expectations. Then, Red Plus White did not sell enough, even though it was received well by fans and critics. And then Pink Tape, some people hate and call it bloated. So this is kinda like the straw that broke the camel's back. In Uzi's case, the continual mishaps have threatened to do reputational damage. But sometimes, a slip-up takes on a different form in that even though the rapper in question is a historic figure in the culture, a project that should have been great turns out to be a blotch on their record. This is certainly the case for Nasir, the Kanye West-produced Nas album from 2018. Now, it's no secret that many things change on a daily basis within the mind of Kanye. However, one thing that doesn't really switch up is the man that he deems to be the best MC of all time. Because when it comes to that question, it's all about one legendary spitter from Queensbridge.
Well, it's Nas because Nas is my favorite rapper, because it's Nas. What do you mean? It's Nas. Nas is Nas. He's like ordained in our video game to be the best rapper and considered to be the best. Yeah, you know I mean? It's Nas. His name is synonymous with greatest rap. You know what I'm saying?
After collaborating a couple of times over the years, the arrival of a full-length Ye and Nas project wasn't necessarily on the cards. But after the legendary producer tweeted in 2016 that, "I promised Obama I'ma do beats on Nas's next album," Ye's power of manifestation kicked in. And suddenly, a 6-year hiatus was over. As part of the iconic Good Music Summer lineup, where Ye dropped 5 7-track albums for artists on his roster, there were high hopes for his all-star team-up, especially after standout projects like Daytona and Kids See Ghosts, but it ultimately fell short of expectations.
Unfortunately, like many of the projects Kanye has had his hands on so far this summer, this thing is not flames from start to finish. After Cop Shot the Kid, I wouldn't say the album takes a nosedive, but it kind of goes from hot to lukewarm, and then just continues at that pace. I guess you could say that Nasir is an admirable release. There are some highlights, there are some cool and interesting moments here and there, but I mean, I gotta admit, I think a lot of the time the production is kind of carrying Nas and making the record interesting.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Ultimately, this album falls very short of Kids See Ghosts or Daytona or Ye in that I'm not really hearing the artists in a new light. I'm not really hearing them push their craft to the edge or do it better than they've ever done it before. In actuality, Nasir is just kind of so-so. It's just mediocrity.
Dropping from number 5 to number 36 in the space of a week, the initial buzz wasn't backed by a sufficiently strong album. And in the aftermath, Nas himself didn't really seem satisfied with the end result, even going as far as to say that it was basically rushed.
I don't know what went wrong. I would say I did want to work more with him. We spent some time there, but I mean, I was working on ideas. He would give me like a few loops and I would write to them, but they wasn't finished. He was working on a lot. He had Cudi, Teyana Taylor. He had his album. I was the only one coming in starting fresh. So I got the less time with him. You know, we really did that album that week that it was supposed to come out. I definitely wanted to work with him a lot more than we did.
But as expected, Ye didn't see it that way at all. Instead claiming it was a superior project that he was happy to play a small role in.
To do Nas's album, this person made Illmatic. People was bugged out because they was like, you didn't get him a better album than you gave yourself. And it's like, he was one of my father figures. He was my brother. He was my stylist from a distance. So when I had an opportunity to make music for him, I'm going to give it everything I got. My grandfather used to say, if you were a janitor, be the best janitor that you can be. And what I like about producing has always been a service position.
True to Kanye fashion, his perspective shifted over time. And he eventually turned his frustration towards the very artists he once supported, accusing them of being ungrateful for what he had given them during the Good Summer album run.
The fuck I'm doing giving Wanna Love You to fucking Tiana? What the fuck I'm doing giving that Daytona album to Pusha? What the fuck I'm doing, bro? That shit, like, that shit was three dark fantasies that I gave away. Cop shot the kid, Nas rapping all goddamn offbeat on it. Don't even want to shoot a video. Then shoot the video, don't even tell me. These motherfuckers don't appreciate me. All these motherfuckers is trying to use me. I'm the greatest motherfucking artist living, and I can do everything. And I'm not being expanded, and my vision is not being expanded to what it is. I'm performing at other people's festivals. I've been wanting a fucking festival.
After that, Nas found himself in a tough spot. But to be fair, it seemed to ignite a fire in him. Because not long after, one of Ye's former protégés turned rivals, Hit-Boy, would be credited with reviving Nas's career through the King's Disease trilogy and Magic series.
Hit changed that. He was more, say that. Yo, I say, what do you think about this? Oh, that's fire, say that. We have a conversation and we're talking about something. He go, oh, nah. And I go, it sound like a bar. Yeah, say that. Mike is right there. Say that. No, I like that. It kind of like pushed the confidence side. It was like there is no mistakes. And I'm overcritical and I didn't have to do that. It wrote itself. It just came out. But it was a lot of it was Hit pushing me.
Because of that, Hit was getting the credit Ye likely felt he deserved. While Nas, even in his 50s, remained just as important to hip hop as ever.
I just want to thank you because obviously Nas has a lot to do with it. But just in terms of kind of, I don't know what it is about your relationship with Nas, but it has inspired him to release a high quantity of music. The fact we got Magic just as like a bonus last year was fucking incredible
thing, and that's what's motivational for me, and I would say him as well, is the fact that every time we drop a project, people are like, nah, this one better than the last one. So my thing is like, let's just keep leveling it up every time. And obviously Nas is who he is, like he's cemented in this shit, and he just motivated to make the music, and it's just strictly about that.
In the Hit-Boy and Nas collaborations, we can see just how much a producer's stock can rise when they get a chance to show how important they are to an artist's career. But it doesn't always go so smooth for those men behind the board. And unfortunately for DJ Mustard, this would be...
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Something he had to find out the hard way. 5 years on from the release of the platinum-selling Perfect 10 back in 2019, it's fair to say that Mustard was no longer at the top of his game. While there was a time where he was inescapable, he hadn't been the top beatmaker in the game for a long time. In fact, without Roddy Ricch, he wouldn't have even made the upper reaches of the Billboard chart this decade. So after an extended period of sending Kendrick Lamar beats in hopes of getting their first real team up, Mustard was naturally ecstatic about K-Dot using one of the many instrumentals he'd sent his way to dismantle Drake on Not Like Us. And while producers like Alchemist kept pretty quiet about his role in Meet the Grams, Mustard truly welcomed the position as the man who made the bomb that K-Dot dropped on Drake. I'll never turn my back on the city, and I'm fully loaded. In fact, from there on out, he doubled down whenever he could on the Drake disses. I don't think I ever want to make a song with that dude, he said about Drake during an interview. He's a strange guy. After playing a crucial role at the pop-out, the acclaimed producer clearly thought there was no better time to unleash a new solo album with Faith of a Mustard Seed. When talking about the album ahead of time, he revealed that its title was inspired by a departed West Coast hero.
I remember like the last conversation I had with Nipsey, he was telling me to name that album Faith of a Mustard Seed, and I'm just like, what? Like, I already got my title, I'm not switching my title. And we talked for like hours that night, and I always just kept it in the back of my head, and he was just like, well, if you don't name this one that, then you should name one of your albums one, you gotta do an album called Faith of a Mustard Seed.
And once again, he never shied away from the second wind that Not Like Us had given, because he knew it was a crucial part of the buzz around the project.
I knew I had this whole album, and I'm just like, okay, what am I gonna do to get myself back hot? What am I gonna do to, you know, I don't wanna do drip checks no more. I did that already. I don't wanna do the weight check stuff. I've done that already. I wanna get as much as in shape as I can. But, you know, I was just like, what am I gonna do? How are we gonna spark for people to be like, oh, I wanna hear Mustard again? You know, that's just like, I think every artist would think about that. And then the song came out, and then it was just like,
well, there's the, my album promotion.
There's my rollout. That's all I needed for.
But no matter what the opening line of Not Like Us meant for his name recognition, it didn't translate to listeners of his new album in the way that he was probably hoping for. And despite features from Schoolboy Q, Travis Scott, Vince Staples, Lil Yachty, Lil Durk, Kodak Black, and a whole host of other acclaimed figures, it only sold 18,000 first week. But while the reception itself was one thing, what didn't help was how Mustard handled it. Basically, he sent mixed messages, initially saying that he was beyond grateful for every unit. Soon, he just began lashing out and started making a whole host of excuses for what went wrong. First, he blamed the quote-unquote Nation of Drizlam, claiming that Drake sent out bots to mess with the album's numbers. The bots trying to fade me. These Drake bots are the Nation of Drizlam. Before then stating that everyone who was hating was a racist, since album sales are a form of white supremacy. A crash out to end all crash outs, Mustard should have just accepted the sales and kept it pushing. Especially when Kendrick was about to turn him into a global catchphrase with that iconic Mustard shoutout on TV Off just months later.
Hey.
And now, he looks to right the wrongs on Perfect 11, a new album which he has begun to tease the release of in the near future. But where the LA producer is getting a chance to settle the score, there are other times when an artist or group's final album proves to be their most underwhelming. And when it came to the legendary Outkast, that was most certainly the case. Throughout the course of their iconic run, Outkast basically never put a foot wrong. From putting the world on notice with Southern Playalistic Cadillac Music, all the way through to Aquemini, Stakonia, and dropping the best-selling rap album of all time with Speakerbox/Love Below, they truly did excel every time they reemerged.
It was a blessing to be successful that young. Like, I think our career is kind of interesting because since our very first album, we've gone platinum and just kept rising. Like, so next...
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Album was double, next three, next four. So it just kept rising.
Led by the unparalleled chemistry of Big Boi and Andre 3000, the two bounced off each other perfectly to the point that many people consider them the greatest group of all time, and with good reason. But their story didn't end with their greatest commercial hit. Instead, it would conclude with the only real dud of their career, Idlewild. It tells the story of Percival and Rooster, played by Andre 3000 and Big Boi, running a bar and club in 1930s America. Another project where Big Boi and Andre basically worked as separate entities, the vibes seemed off even during the initial promo run behind the film, which went on to score 47% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, you find, I mean, it's a little bit of you pretty much in every character. You gotta find that place where you jump off, where you connect it, you know, to the fictitious character so you can make it real for yourself. But I mean, it's just exaggerations of what we are. You know, when Brian Barber wrote it, he knew us. So he knew certain things that, you know, we could do and what we couldn't do at the time.
Yeah, it's just not like one thing in particular. It's like certain, I guess, aspects of character that, you know, you can play with and do different things with. But like you said, you just gotta have room to play. Now I got a lot of hands.
And at the end of the day, what do you hope does better, the film or the soundtrack?
Well, they go hand in hand, so you most definitely hope they both do well. I mean, we've been in the music game since we're like 17, 18 years old, so we're, you know, kind of used to that. I mean, the movie thing is something new to us, but you know, we try not to slack in either one.
As for the soundtrack, Pitchfork's review at the time summed up the general feeling, describing it as bleak. The future of Outkast is either a breakup when Idlewild flops, or if it is a success, a few more mixed bags. Now that they have made a movie that plays off the idea of their oil and water personalities and irreconcilable differences, it's starting to feel like a shtick, one that they're actively pimping. Anyone hoping for the return of the spark that made their great stuff great is, sadly, as big a fool as the kid sitting up nights waiting for his folks to get back together. Sure enough, Idlewild did flop in its own way. As while it went platinum within a month of its release, it's viewed as the only time that the group really missed the mark. This is something which even Andre himself has owned up to in recent times.
We haven't taken a fall, you know what I mean? And I think sometimes you build character or you build something by failure. Idlewild may have been our slip. You know, you never know. The only thing you can do is be honest about what you're doing at the time.
Running out of steam just as the curtain was coming down, the true tragedy of Idlewild is that it ruined a near perfect discography. However, in the case of the new album between Snoop and Dr. Dre, we see an attempt to carry on a legacy from long ago fall drastically short. As the spiritual successor to Snoop's iconic 1993 debut, Doggy Style, rap fans of all ages were thrilled to hear that Dr. Dre would be executively producing a Snoop Dogg album for the first time in 30 years. Titled Missionary, the project represented a drastic shift from the era where Dre was putting on a young Snoop Dogg and giving him the shot to prove himself once and for all, as now they were peers and fellow icons. However, they maintained that what they had on their hands was something special.
Why do people still give a fuck about me and Snoop after 30 and 40 years? He's a walking miracle.
When we make music, we fill the void. We put in music that don't sound like nobody's shit. Like, let me do a song like them or something similar. What's hot? What's in? Fuck all that.
It's about what we're feeling and what we're thinking right now and how we feel like hip-hop is supposed to evolve in the future.
Amen. True GOATs.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's cool.
The only problem is that when it dropped, most people didn't seem to agree on that. Selling an oddly low 36,000 equivalent units, the project peaked at number 20. Maybe this could be because Snoop had been so inconsistent for so long. But it turned out that Dre producing wasn't really the draw that they thought it was, and it's fair to say that it divided opinion. Do not give excuses for this album, it was very lackluster. The younger generation has every right to critique us when something is not good. I gave the album an 8 or 9. Snoop is rapping better than he ever has. As expected, Snoop took it in his stride, suggesting he was totally comfortable with what occurred in terms of performance.
The support for Missionary, long time coming. Love the reception. But let me say this, I've been watching podcasts and people doing reviews, a couple of them specifically, where they started off saying that I wasn't into this album, I don't like Snoop Dogg, I wasn't anticipating this, I don't care. Really just listening just to listen. Started off hating. Get to song 3-4, demeanor changing a little bit. By the time they get to song 8, 9, 10, they loving Snoop Dogg, loving the production, loving the growth. By the time they get to the end, they in tears because they're emotional behind the body of work that me and Dr. Dre put together. Trying to show how to make a body of work, a project. Well received. I love the hate and the love. That's why we do it. We do it because we love what we do. Thank y'all. Missionary in stores right now.
But unfortunately, it seems condemned to be forgotten, as it's ultimately there if you want it, but hasn't really set the world alight.
Honestly speaking, I'm not taking away a single one from my own rotation, but like I was saying, if you're a diehard Snoop fan and you want a new 2024 music to bump, there are good songs on here.
Yes,
there
I are. Just feel like we're always very harsh with the replay value because that's like a subjective thing, especially with what you're keeping out of here. The only objective thing I could say about the replay value is that it's 16 songs. So at least like it's not overbloated, but realistically, you really want to look at this ratio, bro? Like the only thing you could even consider taking, at least for rotations, is Shangri-La, Out of the Blue, Hard Knocks.
Gorgeous is good. Gorgeous is a really solid song.
And then, like, bro, but you're talking about
four
out of 16?
Skyscrapers you could take out, Now or Never, Negotiator. I'd give this a mid rating. I think there's at least like 50% of this track list has decent or good tracks.
And speaking of an artist still dropping to an increasingly muted response, look no further than DaBaby. For a brief shining moment, this North Carolina rapper seemed to have the entire package required to progress to megastar status. Packing charisma, comedic flair, and the love of female audiences, it was no surprise that for a little while, he had more monthly listeners than Drake. But in one of the biggest acts of self-sabotage that anyone has ever seen, DaBaby took the stage at Rolling Loud and essentially set his public image on fire with a series of ill-advised and discriminatory comments.
You didn't show up today with HIV, AIDS, any of them deadly sexually transmitted diseases that'll make you die in 2-3 weeks, put a cell phone light in the air. Lady, if your pussy smell like water, put a cell phone light in the air. Fellas.
Lights up.
Fellas, if you ain't sucking in the parking lot, put your cell phone like
that.
Immediately, the internet exploded. Taken to task by Elton John, kicked from a $1 million Boohoo clothing deal, and relieved of his spot on Dua Lipa's Levitating that had just interested him to a whole new audience, DaBaby had really messed up. But initially, you couldn't tell him that. And he basically tried to shoot himself some bail by suggesting everyone was just being oversensitive.
This one time, I'm gonna get back to giving my love to my fans. That's what I'm saying, because what me and my fans do at the live show, it don't concern you. It's not y'all business. What I do at a live show is for the audience at the live show. It'll never translate correctly to somebody looking at a little 5-6 second clip on their phone. It just don't work like that.
After that failed, he issued a series of apologies, but none really did much to help his situation. After laying low for a while after, DaBaby would realize that the repercussions were merciless. 2 years after reaching the top with his number one album, Blame It On Baby, Baby On Baby 2 plummeted 33 spots, landing at number 34. In retrospect, he realized how much he messed up. Talking about it extensively in interviews and pledging that if he ever gets another run at the top, he'll do a lot better.
$20, $30 million that I would have had before the ball dropped. I had $30 million worth of shows on the schedule before December 31st. I was finna buy my private plane, all that shit. But it is what it is. It go how it go.
Now insistent that he's blackballed, the self-proclaimed live show killer can't sell out venues anymore. And despite having a little buzz after 2023's Shake Some going viral, his recent project titled How the F*** Is This a Mixtape sold just 9K units first week. In DaBaby's case, there's a very clear explanation behind where it all went wrong. But for others, it's a little harder to quantify exactly what the problem is or what caused the flop. And in the case of Big Sean, he's experiencing that with the new album he just dropped. A stalwart of the game since the mid-2000s, Detroit's own Big Sean is in a weird spot in the game. Revered by some as an elite spitter while being clowned by others as corny, it's fair to say that for a long time now, he's been a divisive figure. But that's never really damaged his career all that much. For starters, there was a time not too long ago where he was considered to be in the same league as Kendrick, Cole, and Drake. But much like any other contender that once got thrust into that conversation, things gradually shifted. And now, he's a far cry from where he used to be. Released 4 years on from what some consider to be a career highlight with Detroit 2, his sixth album, Better Me Than You, failed to connect with most listeners. Granted, it was loved by people such as Rob Markman, with the caveat that its more contemplative style meant that it wouldn't bring those big commercial hits he had earlier in his career.
Better Me Than You, I like the album on a very human level. Again, I can't tell you what it's going to sell. I can't tell you where it's going to chart, what singles it's going to spawn that hit big. And, you know, I don't know that there's a song bigger than Click on here, or as big as Click, or as big as Ass, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, or My Last, or whatever the real Big Sean, the big singles are Bounce Back. Like, I don't know if this spawns any of those. And to me, that's all right. I don't know if that was necessarily the intent to repeat that success, but it seems like he needed to get something off his chest so that I can salute.
To others, it cemented his place as a veteran second stringer when it comes to where he resides in the mainstream, even sparking comparisons to a legend of the 2000s who is similarly respected but no longer a commercial force.
Big Sean is fabulous for this generation.
Was it good?
Holy shit.
Wait, excuse me? Fab. He's fab for this generation.
Oh, fabulous.
He walked right out there with it.
Yeah.
He didn't hesitate at all.
And
wow.
And I don't know how to elaborate more without potentially offending someone. It's not a bad thing. It's just a thing to me. That's what I got from pressing play this morning.
I want to try to challenge him, but I can't.
I'm trying to think.
Hold on. My only thing is Fab's longevity is...
Shit, Sean been around for a minute now?
Yeah, but for this generation, they track.
Yeah.
And with Sean no longer playing the bravado-filled young gun, Ice argued that these alterations to his worldview and approach meant that as an artist, he could no longer be as compelling.
It's hard for me. I compare artists to their discographies. It's hard for me to hear Dark Sky Paradise, Big Sean, and then hear...
Finally Famous, Big Sean.
Yeah. This it's going to sound really f***ed up what I'm about to say, and I apologize if anybody gets offended, but I'm just not a fan of mental health rapping Big Sean. Like the therapy, the meditation, all that positivity, it just don't sound right authentic in the music. No. It's okay. Authentic. It's who you are today.
Okay.
But it almost feels like something's missing now in the music. You've gotten to a place of peace and tranquility in your life that it don't sound good in the music.
And sadly for Sean, a lot of the public seemed to agree that they didn't even listen to it to discover the gems that were there. With just 23,000 sales, the album wasn't only his first to debut outside of the top 5, but ended up peaking at number 25. Nowadays, it seems like Sean is more of an underground rapper rather than the megastar he once was. But at least with all the work that he's done, he has a mindset which will mean he's likely more than capable of handling it.
When I analyze those times of what some people may consider it a failure, I don't consider it a failure. I consider it exactly what was supposed to happen, period. So I have never failed. In fact, the times that I have regretted, if it would have changed any course of where I would be today, then I probably wouldn't have even chosen it. And it's always an opportunity, no matter where you're at, to get to where you know you deserve to be at, no matter what.
In Big Sean's case, there are plenty of people who are horrified to see him flop. After all, there's no denying that for a while, he was a legitimate player in the game. But the same can't be said for every rapper, and when it comes to Ice Spice, most hip-hop fans appear to feel that it was overdue. Exploding onto the scene with Munch, Ice Spice initially caught attention with her distinctive look and singular approach to the drill sound that's usually defined by despair. And while people initially speculated that she would be here today and gone tomorrow, she really stuck it out.
Everybody was trying to be like, oh, she a one-hit wonder, rah-rah-rah, but it's like, now what? Two-hit wonder?
But as she began to become overexposed, the public truly grew sick of what Ice had to offer. And as opinions changed, she lost an astounding 25 million monthly listeners between June of 2023 and the same time the following year. Still, a newly skinny Ice Spice, who lost some of the aesthetic that undeniably made her popular, kept pushing the release of her debut album Y2K. And before it dropped, she seemed to have a ton of confidence.
I feel everything. I'm feeling everything about it all at once.
So what does this album say about you?
It's really just all in there for you to like listen and see, you know? I don't want to like spoil nothing, but I'm feeling very rich, very fab, very like myself.
But it turned out that this confidence was more than a little misplaced. As while it had been previously suggested that she was hip-hop's new princess, sales of 24,000 and a project that yielded literally zero hits wouldn't do it. And even though she tried to brush it off, the fall-off was cemented by the emergence of the deluxe version, which yielded just 4,800 units in its first week. Now outpaced by the likes of Sexy Red and Glorilla, Ice is going back to the typically prosperous well of thirst traps while she tries to figure out what her next move is.
I don't love niggas, I just be in lust. Thank God I'm rich, I was just on a bus.
All the while, putting out lackluster freestyles with On the Radar, making her look even worse.
Nigga, you fried. You just be hot. But you was my heart. Now we apart.
She's starting to rhyme like Dr. Seuss. One fish, two fish, three fish, four fish ass. Flops in hip-hop can strike at any time and in any circumstance. As always, I'll see y'all on the next one. Peace.